Hello and welcome to Pilots, where geeks talk TV, all the way from the first episode to the bitter end of cancellation. I'm Desmond Hassing.
With me
this week is my best friend, the guy who talks when I'm talking. Seriously, I mean, I'm the star. What's wrong with him?
We can tell you're the star because you have a star on your shirt today.
Damn right. I'm wearing a Captain America shirt, so I'm the king. I'm better than all you people. No, he's the one who puts the geek in Musing the Geek, Mr. Daniel Zisko.
How are you? And I just have to say, the intro's nice. It's rather sad about going to cancellation.
Well, you know, any good sci-fi fan knows that if you start watching a sci-fi show on network television, there's a good chance you're not going to finish watching that show. Because producers really like the idea, they sometimes don't like the ratings. Also joining us this week is our local man of mystery, the man who is terse upon occasion, just Will. How you doing today, Will?
Pretty good.
See, he's not the best color man in baseball for nothing, folks. So, for this first episode of Pilots, we've decided to take a look at Firefly for the 10th anniversary of Firefly, and specifically the first episode, Serenity. And we're also going to compare it and contrast it a little bit to a later episode. Well, the one you saw on television the first night, The Train Job, which is by far not as good an episode.
Maybe. It does have some things that are better than Serenity, I feel, but I'm sure we'll get to that.
I'm sure. So when you're starting a TV show, obviously the most difficult thing to do is you have to find a way, an interesting way, to introduce your protagonist. And as anyone who's seen a Joss Whedon show knows, Joss Whedon really likes people talking. What I really found so telling about Serenity is that he did a very good job of introducing Mal in about 45 seconds.
In the battle, Serenity Valley.
Perfectly, really, because if you think about it, the very first thing we see Mal do, other than falling on his face, which is classic Nathan Fillion slapstick humor, is he takes his radio operator and basically takes the rule book, throws it out the window, and commands him to call in an aerial strike. So we start off by seeing Mal...
With a field promotion.
Yes, with
a field promotion.
Well, you know, it's also Joss Whedon. It's going to have some humor to it. But it's rather telling that the very first act we see is it's not immoral, it's not a bad act, but it is one that defies the rules. So it kind of gives us a tone for who Mal is.
Do you want to talk about maybe what Firefly's about before we jump into the show?
Well, I presume that if you're listening to a Firefly podcast, you've at least seen the movie Serenity. However, Daniel's right. Perhaps we shall. Daniel, you may begin with a description of the TV show.
Excellent. Firefly was a television show which aired on the Fox Network in 2002. It was basically about a crew of misfits on the edge of space who were fighting for their every last breath by taking whatever
now,
job.
Are you describing Firefly or Lex? Because that's not what I saw.
Firefly is actually based off of a book, which the name escapes me right now, that Joss Whedon wrote about a group of bandits, if you will, after the Civil War, who moved to the Wild West and were trying to make it in the Wild West. And he ended up taking that concept and basically making a space western about it. So you have a crew on a ship that is headed by a captain who is in the Civil War that's in the show. And they're just sort of going through space, doing jobs, trying to get... You know, trying to survive. The crux of it, which we'll get into it, the first episode ends up having a major problem with the introduction of Simon and River, and that kind of drives the rest of at least the first season.
Yes, you say that like there was a second season.
The movie was the second season.
And it's still about Simon and River, so it's really the first season now, isn't it? If I had to guess, I'd say the movie's more like the back nine. it's that simple. That's what it is. But yeah, no, what did everybody think of that introduction of Mal? And I'm wondering if anybody else noticed that it's actually Joss Whedon and not Battlestar Galactica who stole World War II era filming technology first. Did anyone else catch that?
I did not.
I did not either.
When Mal falls down on the ground, there's a rather dramatic zoom in.
There is, yes.
And it's very indicative of the field photographic and how they shot, at least in the Pacific campaign, because they were all actually film crew cameramen. So they would do that. You had a plane coming at you. You didn't just stay in a wide shot. You zoomed your lens as much as mm-hmm. you could. And it really makes you feel kind of like you're there. So Mal's falling on the ground. And there's explosions happening everywhere. And suddenly you push in on him. It kind of feels like you fell down next to him, which is really good. It gets you into the grit right away.
I'm nodding my head like anybody can see me.
No, it's radio, Dan. Radio.
Perhaps before I add anything, I should like explain my perspective that I bring to this.
Yes, yes. For those that don't know, Will has only seen Serenity and the Train Job. Whereas Dan and I have seen Trinity and the Train Job at least 10 times each.
Sorry, you're assuming that your listeners are all people who have seen all of this, and yet you have one person here, myself, who has actually not seen all of this. I was given the task of watching these two so that I might have something to contribute. But I figure it's a unique perspective in that I've only seen those and can add the perspective of somebody who isn't already a gigantic fan.
Yeah, yeah. But
oh, you will be. You will be a gigantic fan.
We were discussing immediately before broadcast that you're just going to go home and watch them all now.
And I very likely will, but that was not my perspective from watching those first 10 minutes, honestly.
Okay.
The opening scene, I was really thrown. It struck me as poor special effects. I wasn't blown away by the acting. It took until
it was 2002.
Granted, it took me till I was through the second episode to actually kind of feel hooked, and I had actually gone back and watched it again so that my wife could see it, and that time it actually flowed much better than my initial walkthrough on it.
Now, see, I would have thought that you would have dug the no sound in space quality of Firefly.
Perhaps. Though I'm thrown most of the time by the Old West music that's thrown into it.
You're thrown in a good way or a bad way?
It does remind me of StarCraft. I know we're not StarCraft players here apart from myself, but for those of you who've played it's fairly similar in having that Old West in space vibe to it. The theme song I was rather unimpressed with.
I tend to fast forward through the theme song.
But yes, I'm watching and all I noticed was Nathan Fillion seems completely inappropriately dressed to be in the middle of a battle. And that it seemed like a very thrown together sort of set design that they were working on there. But yes, on a second watch through it, it definitely flowed much better.
Excellent.
That's interesting because I think because, you know, for you and I, we're colored so much on Firefly. Like, we love Firefly. You know, I bought stuff at the California Brown Coats booth. I have a Mal costume. And to actually hear that coming from someone who'd seen it for the first time, oh, you nice. Des just dumped out his California Brown 57th Overlanders badge, Death Before Submission. Very nice. Very nice.
That's way too much money at Comic-Con, my
friend. With the Serenity in Japanese on that. I like that. Or Chinese, not Japanese. Chinese. I like that.
You have watched the show, right?
Several times.
Actually, one of the things I noticed getting the second watch through on it actually was I thought that entire opening scene, while you're right, I think it does a good job of introducing who that character is. I also thought that it would have worked very well to have fit some of that in flashback style further into the show. Because as I'm watching it through the second time, and I notice as the episode goes on that obviously Mal is no great fan of religion or God, and it took until the second watch through that I noticed that he pulls out and kisses the cross
exactly.
In that opening scene.
Yes.
And it didn't stand out to me at all watching it the first time.
Well, you know, even in the first two episodes, which is what we're discussing tonight, I don't think that you see a distaste or a distrust of God in Mal. You see a distaste or distrust of religion, which is a very different...
You know, we've had this discussion. Mal, because, you know, I noticed, I think, on the second time, too, that he kissed the cross, and this is years ago that I watched it. That for me, the entire arc of 10 episodes or 12 episodes and the movie is Mal regaining his faith. And it's a simple thing that happens in the first episode where he has faith, and then all of a sudden, and we'll get to when Shepherd Book shows up, that's gone. It's been 6 years, and it's gone, and it's about Mal getting his faith back.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, the entire opening of the first episode, the entire battle scene, ends with a visual, specifically because it is the death of, well, pretty much anything good and redeeming in Mal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
As
clearly,
a character.
Clearly, yeah.
I mean,
clearly.
So it's treated with a great deal of weight. It's a very long, drawn-out scene. And it's interesting that Will brings up the music, because I think the music in the show is absolutely beautiful. And it does a much better job of underscoring the action than most television themes do. Normally, they're there to let you know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, the bad guys are coming to get you.
No, granted, I appreciate it better than running some cheesy music that you think is appropriate for space. And I liked the way, as I watched the shows, that it was obvious that they... And I'm shocked that it pulls it off so well. It seems able to incorporate with the exorcism people you see in the background, people from any different kind of culture or objects from any given time period are all thrown in together and it works.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, so obviously.
I think adding a different kind of music in there is interesting, and I give it credit for not being what you would expect.
Yeah. No, I until you see the horses. And and once you realize that horses and cows
are going to
really.
There are.
I mean, I don't want to ruin the show for you, Will, but later in the series, they smuggle cows.
There's a two episode kind of arc about smuggling cows, which is Shindig and Safe, I think, is the two episodes.
Which ironically enough, at the time the show came out, is something the critics absolutely hated.
They didn't
understand how you could have spaceships
and cows essentially, and
people in living in abject poverty, and yet there's people bringing them things on a spaceship. And obviously, that was a very valid concern to have, but it just was an indication that the people who had problems like that really weren't involved in the characters. And I can understand that to a degree. It's always difficult to do a show with so large an ensemble cast. 9 characters is a lot of characters to attempt to get people invested in rapidly, which is one of the challenges that Joss has in this first episode.
I would agree with that. But going back to that first battle, so, you know, we've got Mal falling down, and then you've got him talking to his crew, essentially, his men, and Zoe, you know, whatever. And he has that field promotion. And then he's got Brandis, who is, you know, literally, and it's a great moment because you've got this kid who's scared, which I imagine happens a lot in battle. And he's got the great line, you know, how he reassures them, we're not going to die because we are just too pretty to die.
Yes.
Which really is that sort of battlefield
and
kind of humor to, you know.
That didn't work out too well.
No,
for
he
him
ended
now,
up getting shot.
And him getting shot was, I thought, actually brilliantly done, the way they filmed that scene. And it was sort of a side note almost.
Well, it's not of a great deal of consequence, but by the same token, it's all part of that visual representation of the destruction of Mal's world.
Indeed.
But
one questions that if that last hit didn't land, if they had just lost the war, would Mal be a much more up or jovial character, in that, like, it does very much have a Battle of New Orleans feel to it. Like, I mean, you've already lost the war, and then all of a sudden you're still losing men.
Yeah, well, I mean, and it's that whole shot. It's interesting that you bring that up, because there's a few shots in the entire series and movie that I love, and that's one of them. Is in that 10-second shot, says everything you need to know. They've lost the war. He's lost his faith. The guy next to him that's too pretty to die has now been shot. It's all in slow-mo. It's done very well, and then we immediately cut to space.
Yes, and we also have to, you have to consider that they weren't a squad at the beginning of that battle. They were at least a platoon.
Oh, yeah. No, they've been losing men left and right.
And so at the end of that scene, Zoe and Mal are the only ones who survive.
Exactly.
Right. And I like that it has that sort of the brutal realism, if you will, of knowing in that shot it just could have just as easily have been Mal who got shot. Yes. and ended it all.
Exactly. Well, and also Joss does a wonderful job of mixing all that with the other half of Mal's introduction, where he lets you know that you're looking at an Indiana Jones-style character. Which happens immediately preceding that shot, and that's when Mal shoots down the skiff. And what does he get for his victory?
He loses.
No, the skiff crashes on him.
Yeah, but that's, well, and again, it's very indicative of that character and all of these characters. Okay, I got a question. So
yeah.
In that opening scene, is the introduction of Captain Malcolm Reynolds, who will be Captain Malcolm Reynolds, and Zoe, his right-hand man, if you will, are they introduced properly? And I think Mal is, but I think Zoe's not.
I think that he made very early on in the creative process the decision that he could not give all 9 characters a proper introduction in a single episode.
And I didn't feel like she was well-developed through the first 2 episodes that I've seen. I assume that as the show goes on, that she and some of the other characters are better developed, but at this point, I think she... And
honestly,
her husband,
speaking,
whose name
Wash.
Escapes me,
Wash Alan, the brilliant Alan Tudyk.
Yeah, I can remember his real name, but not his character's name. That yeah,
don't
I didn't feel like either
death.
Of them were especially well developed through those first 2 episodes, and I see that it's obviously going to be difficult given the number of characters.
Yeah, well,
shake
I mean,
your head at me,
obviously. Folks at home, if you're wondering if the drinking has started, well, yes, it has.
Hey, we're sitting here talking about a show, very sort of monotone. I'm livening it up, man. I got whiskey. We're good.
Okay, good. That's wonderful. But yeah, no. Honestly,
this is my third, by the way.
Honestly, I think that the decision was made that Zoe was going to be one of the more one-dimensional characters in the show. She has a function on the ship. She does that function, but she is herself really only serves as a Lord.
Dan has pulled up Ron Glass's IMDb page featuring and him with a fantastic afro.
That is an afro, my friend.
From way back in the day. I saw his credits start back with, I think, All in the Family.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
All the way to playing Ross's divorce lawyer.
Exactly.
Oh, Shepherd Book.
Yes. But yeah, Zoe reminded me, and obviously it's out of order, but she reminds me a lot of Lana off of Archer, sort of that extra badass to be available to shoot people who's never especially well-developed, but you like her better than any sort of other generic right-hand man.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'd agree with that. But I think that was a specific choice. I you can't have 9 super well-developed characters in a TV show. I mean, obviously, the show only had 13 episodes.
And she's a good contrast to Jane.
Yeah, I suppose, although I don't know if she's really the... I think she's really the contrast to Mal more than she is Jane. Because the truth is that Mal does things wrong all the time, and it's why his plans go wrong. Procedure is a good thing, and Zoe's kind of all about procedure, so she's kind of a foil for Mal.
But then you've got Jane on the other side, who is the complete opposite of procedure, and so I see his point. I do see his point.
Jane's not the complete opposite
he
of procedure.
He really is. I mean, it's just like,
Jane,
why aren't we shooting this guy? Why aren't we shooting this guy? It's like you've got
Jane
Mal in the middle between the two of them.
Jane follows Jane's procedure,
all right, let's,
okay?
Let's keep going. We're gonna start getting way off topic about the entire show.
No.
You're trying to keep it chronological here.
Yes, I'm trying to keep it chronological.
Right now we're talking about the first episode.
What? The first scene of the first episode.
Yeah, we just got done with the first scene in the first episode.
Which took we've been talking about the first scene longer than the first scene actually aired.
Yes, but it's also arguably the single most important scene in the first pilot, because it we have to introduce Mal. That's the show. The show will not work if you do not have a protagonist, and he's the protagonist.
All right,
and
I'll
it may be a 45-second long scene, but it does it very brilliantly. But moving on. All right,
we can talk about that for an hour if you want, man. I don't care. I'm just saying.
I don't know that everyone wants to listen to a 9-hour podcast on Serenity from the TV episode. Maybe 9 hours on Firefly combined, but not just the first episode. But no, so obviously we move forward from that. We have a large time shift, a time jump, if you will.
6 years.
Yes.
I believe. It's 6 years.
It's 6 years. And we only really have Zoe and Mal as representations of what's happened in that time period, and Zoe obviously doesn't change very much through the course of the entire episode at all. She's a little less terse after the first scene, and from time to time actually says things that suggest that she's a human being and not an automaton. But we do see in Mal, obviously he becomes a much darker character, and then the challenge for Joss Whedon becomes immediately he has to introduce new characters that are both interesting and humorous. And he does that very well. I mean, that was my opinion. Well, what did you think of the introductions of Kaylee, Jane, and Wash?
Well, I really like the introduction of Wash.
Well, obviously.
They start off brilliantly with him with the dinosaur fight.
Yes.
And I think...
Which is a shirt you can actually own, by the way, if you want to buy it at the Brown Coat booth.
There you go. And I thought that was probably the only moment that you could have Wash in either of the two episodes where he's more than just the guy who is the pilot and happens to be there. You actually see some of his personality developed there, and it's a lighthearted and funny moment, and we all love dinosaurs, and especially dinosaurs that fight. So I definitely liked his introduction. I don't quite frankly remember the introduction, how it goes with Jane or Kaylee. How do they come in?
Well, Kaylee is introduced, obviously, once they get the goods. Well, she's first introduced in the scene where they kill the power in the ship.
And she goes, I can't get down.
She ends up stuck on top of a girder in the dark. It's not the best introduction. The better introduction is the one that comes just briefly after that, where they're loading the gear and she's talking about basically how happy and peppy she is, and everyone's making fun of her for it.
Yeah, I thought her sort of key scene that I remember was when she meets Shepard. I thought you got the best insight into her personality.
Yeah, I certainly the ever beautiful Jewel State. I think that's probably her best scene in the pilot.
And again, coming to it having not known a lot of this, I'm at least familiar with the fact that Summer Glau is a fanboy idol of sorts, and it's funny having watched only these two episodes, because she's never particularly attractive or interesting. She's mostly a like a wounded deer character who looks like a mess throughout these whole things. But Jewel State is, you know, adorable through these two, and I'm sort of surprised that she's not the icon, having watched those couple of episodes.
Well, Summer Glau didn't really become a fanboy idol out of Firefly.
No, I think it was more Terminator.
It was.
I think it was more Terminator.
It was the low-cut shirts. Obviously, River is always played as a kind of non-sexual creature. It would be really odd otherwise.
It's true. And, you know, speaking of Kaylee, Mal's line when they land on the name of the planet is escaping me, where Jane, you know, basically says, can we stop her from being cheerful? And I actually have the line right here. It's, you know, Mal says, I don't believe there's a power in the verse that can stop Kaylee from being cheerful. We know in that instant who Kaylee is. She's the optimistic, just everything is peachy, everything's fine. That comes out later when she gets shot later in the episode. And yeah. When she says, it's no one's fault. That really works for Kaylee. Wash really works well because he starts in that first line where he's very serious, and then all of a sudden we're talking about the land and I shall call it your death. That works. Jane doesn't really get an introduction.
That's not true.
He doesn't.
No, he does. He does. Jane's introduction is the brilliant scene between him, Mal, and Dobson. That's really the scene.
During the interrogation scene?
During the interrogation scene. Yeah. That's his real introduction. Yes, he's in the episode before that. But that's the first time we see who and what Jane is. For all his bluster, for all his evilness, as you will, he's
the Mark Hamill looking dude.
Who? Is who the Mark Hamill looking dude?
Is Dobson the Mark Hamill looking dude?
Dobson?
Yes.
The agent?
Yes, the agent.
Yes.
Mark, I love it how you called him the Mark Hamill looking
that's
dude.
What he looks like Mark Hamill post motorcycle crash.
Yes. Yet another podcast where Mark Hamill's motorcycle accident comes into our podcast.
Because he was adorable before then, using adorable again. But in the
so
afterwards...
basically what we're saying is that Dobson's not adorable.
No.
No.
He's not.
Dobson's pretty brilliantly casted. I wish I remembered that guy's name because he's if I had a serial killer part, I would totally cast that guy. He's not particularly distinctive looking.
Dobson was played by an actor named Carlos Jacot.
Yeah.
Doesn't look like a Carlos.
He doesn't look like a Carlos, right? He's very much not a Carlos.
No, not... Not in the least.
Hey, Carlos.
But that's really Jane's scene, and the one that introduces him, and no one's paying attention to me.
I am definitely paying attention to you.
Okay, well that's his introduction, and we see that what Jane is in the show.
Okay,
he is the purported heavy.
But Jane's not the heavy.
No, but that's because Joss specifically makes him not the heavy. There is a balancing scene to the Dobson scene.
Which scene
and
is that?
It's the one you mentioned earlier today. It's the one that takes place when Kaylee's having surgery and Jane is at the window.
Yes. Yes.
And is biting his nails and is very, very concerned about Kaylee. Someone
because everybody
who
loves
earlier
Kaylee.
In the episode, he poked a lot of fun at.
Yeah. Because at the end of the day, not only does everybody love Kaylee, that establishing shot shows that even Jane, as gruff as he is, loves Kaylee, and there's a softer side to him.
Well,
which...
I think it shows a lot more than that. I think what that scene shows us about Jane is that Jane is desperate for a family, and
about to bring that up. Yeah.
It just so happens that in this episode, at this point in the show, the only person he has that relationship with is Kaylee.
And interestingly enough, part of what makes this show great is the fact that it not only is it about Mal and Faith and everything else we're about to talk about is... This show, over the course of the series, and we see a little bit of this in the pilot, is it's about the creation of a family.
Yes.
And at the end of the movie, when they're basically willing to die for each other, which Will has not seen yet, there's very much a familial bond there, which
yes,
I really think
much.
That if Serenity, the movie, would have become season two, season three would have been very interesting, especially with the change in... without spoiling anything, that there were very definite things that happened toward the end of Serenity that really changed the cast and really changed how they relate to each other.
Yes.
So it really is about a family, and we see that with Jane. Like, he's the first person in that scene when he's looking, you know, making sure that Simon isn't going to hurt Kaylee at all. We're trying to build some sort of bonds here. And we know that, because of Out of Gas, a later episode, that this crew hasn't been together all that long.
No, they really haven't, and what you need to understand about Jane is that he's not nearly so simplistic a character as he appears at the surface. A good example in this episode is the release of Dobson.
Okay, which how?
Right.
Mal goes through that episode and comes up with the idea that Jane let him loose on purpose.
Yes.
And he comes to the conclusion, Mal does at least, I don't know if the audience is quite there with it, that Jane did so to force Mal to make a decision about Dobson, not because he was actually betraying Mal.
Yeah, which he actually, Mal ends up having to do, but in a very, which I'm sure we'll get to, in a very different way than I expected. When
yes,
I
and if you think about it, that's Jane protecting the family.
Exactly.
Jane understands exactly how dangerous.
I pick a little up bit. The family vibe from just those first two episodes. I thought it was sort of funny. Obviously, Jane has the opportunity to betray Mal, and they have that entire discussion about it, and obviously he decides not to. But what sort of struck me is there was a scene involving, is it Inara.
Yeah.
And I believe it was Shepherd, where they were talking about Mal and yeah. about, you know.
The part of the episode that I think is really the statement of the show.
The part about him being a mystery, and they were both talking about, you know, that he was mysterious and how she liked the fact that so few men are. And at the same time, I was thinking that I didn't find Mal a particular mystery. He was somebody who was obviously just very protective of his crew. This is the crew that is obviously on the side of the lost war. They have bonded together. They strike me as a family right from the beginning, out to protect each other, because that's all they have.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't say that it was a that either character was particularly right about Mal being a mystery, but that is the statement of the show, that little line set. That's what we're doing there. We're going on a journey to see who Mal is, not so much to see him grow and change, but to see who he is and how he got there. What I found really telling about that particular scene, and I don't know if you guys caught this, but only Joss Whedon would go from that scene, which has perhaps the most revelatory statement in
which
the episode.
Which scene are we talking about?
An Aaron book in her show.
Oh, toward the end of the episode. Yeah.
Where they're talking about him being a mystery. And Joss goes from that shot to immediately grounding the episode in reality by having Mal use the toilet. And it's a very well thought out, how do you use a toilet in space? And everything comes out of the wall.
I was actually kind of jealous of that. I want that because it looks really it looks really space efficient.
And it's convenient.
Yeah.
It's really convenient.
And I told Rachel we should get one of those, and she gave me a very sideways look because I don't think it matches with our suburban IKEA ideals of what things are supposed to be, but as a guy who values efficiency, I thought that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
exactly. All right, so we've introduced Mal, we've introduced Zoe, we've introduced Jane, we've introduced Wash, we've introduced Kaylee. Those are your five, you know, people that were on the ship originally.
That's the family.
They land on what again? The planet that just
is it Persephone?
No, is it Persephone?
Persephone is where they pick up Inara as Persephone.
Okay. Maybe it is Persephone.
Persephone really is home. And in the TV show, it's home. It's the only place they routinely come back to.
And then we introduce...
namely because Badger just kicks ass.
Badger kind of does. And then we introduce Inara. And Inara, the way we introduce her is she's in the middle of having sex. And we don't know who this character is. And throughout the course of that scene, we learn that she's a courtesan. And courtesans are looked on as sort of high class members of society. Why is she with this ship? And I really liked the juxtaposition of
the
two.
What's really brilliant about that scene is that it simultaneously shows that she's a courtesan. It shows where courtesans fit in this imaginary world that Joss Whedon is creating. And it also shows just how bullshit the idea of a courtesan really is. Because what's the very first thing that happens once they start talking? He immediately begins treating her like a whore.
But does he do that because he likes her, or does he do that because he's annoyed at whores?
No, he does that because it's not unlike strippers, Dan. If you can convince yourself that the stripper's not there because you have money in your wallet, you're having a good time. But the second you breach that envelope and your realization happens that this person is here because I'm paying them money, it's a lot less romantic, and you tend to get slightly defensive about it.
I usually A, keep drinking, or B, go gambling.
Well, yes, that was just an example. I wasn't talking about you
both.
In your real life.
Usually both. Yeah. Usually, and that usually snaps me out of it pretty quickly.
Yeah, but I think that's a really brilliant scene because of it, because it's going
to
set up.
Are we talking about the scene where he introduces her to Shepherd?
No,
the guy that she's with. Because if I understood correctly, he was in the mindset of you know, he's fallen in love with her and wants her to come away with him.
That is indeed a part of
which
it.
Which I assume is something that she runs into regularly, and in fact it's discussed later on, I think, when she's talking to Kaylee.
Oh, yes, and it's one of the reoccurring themes of the show. Sure. But I'm just pointing out, there's also some really brilliant camera work in that scene.
Between Inara
and the guy on Persephone.
The
yeah.
dude.
Because there are scenes that are taking place simultaneously in the real world and scenes that are taking place in her head.
Okay.
There's moments where she's talking.
Yes.
That are footage of her not talking.
Yeah.
There's this whole counter narrative going on inside her head that we never really learn about, but it's really quite fascinating. It makes her a much more fascinating character in my opinion, because she runs the risk of being the most one-dimensional character in the show if you're not careful. Yeah.
Yeah, but they handle her very well, I think.
They do. But I'm saying that's part of, I think, how they do it, at least in the pilot. Is this, you get this sense that there's a deep and dark inner world happening inside of her head. What did you think, Will?
I don't know if I caught the counter narrative. I did notice it was interesting camera work, but I think she's a fascinating character to have on there as part of a contrast. You don't just have this space crew, you also have this very out of place character who seems to be there, and everybody wants to know, why is she there? How does she fit
yes.
in?
Yes, and you'll also learn as you watch the show going forward, Will, that she's there to provide a contrast against the independent mindset, because she's one of the characters on the ship that were obviously for unification rather than independence.
Right, and perhaps to show off my naivete of exactly what's going on, not having watched more of them. If I understand correctly, she's more or less renting space on this
ship.
She's
renting the shuttle, yes.
And the advantage to her is that because they travel from place to place, she can get around to a variety of clientele, and that's the advantage she's getting out of the situation, or am I reading
that wrong? Well, you know, that's her justification. I don't think we ever really learn what it is that drove Inara away from home.
It's true, and I think there's something interesting there, because we do get the sense that Inara's on Serenity to get to a bunch of clients, and having a companion on board gives Mal some legitimacy.
Yeah.
Yeah, which, you know, which is...
Which is how it's explained.
Because since a companion is high class and they've got a companion on board, all of a sudden that opens doors for them that would ordinarily be closed for kind of a ragtag team of ruffians.
And she saves their ass in the second episode.
She does. She actually saves their ass a couple times, but definitely in the second episode, which I love. There's that great line that Zoe has, "How could you? I was weak." I love Zoe.
Yeah.
I love Zoe. I actually did my final paper in my pop culture class on Firefly, and the whole point was of that paper was basically, here are all of these stereotypes that you find in pop culture. Now go find something in pop culture that, you know, basically embodies these stereotypes to prove my professor's kind of thesis correct. And Firefly gets rid of all of them.
Well,
and
you know,
I got a really good grade on that paper, but my teacher hated me for it.
Yeah, no, you're supposed to tell the teacher that their theory of the world is exactly correct.
And
that's
yes.
how you could. Also, where did you go to school that you got to take a pop culture class?
I actually went National University. One of my electives was contemporary pop culture. And I realized the class was bullshit about halfway through. And she told us that...
Most people would have realized that when reading the name.
Well, I mean, she told us about halfway through, you're going to do a final paper on some element of pop culture. And I said, all right, Firefly. And it just turned out that every single one of her, you know, these are pop culture tropes that happen in every single thing in pop culture. Firefly got rid of all of them.
Yeah.
All of them.
Well, there's a reason for that, at least in my opinion. One thing that makes Firefly very much different than your average sci-fi drama is the fact that the damsel in distress, the person who we're setting out to save, really isn't a fully fledged character. I mean, River may have a human girl-sized body, but she's really played as a child. And because of that, it's not really, the fact that she's a girl is not gender-related in the least. So without a damsel in distress, it alters things a little bit. However, I don't think that Zoe is kind of an overreaction to gender roles, I think, rather than a good, fully formed character herself.
There's more about African-American roles with this professor, that anytime you have a black woman in any pop culture, she takes on the mammy role, and Zoe definitely is not that role.
No. You know who has that role?
In Firefly?
Yeah.
Kaylee?
Wash.
Yes!
Wash is kind of the moral center. You don't really see it in the first two episodes, but he is kind of the moral center of the boat. Which is really quite odd, given the fact that we have a character who is a priest. and you would think would be the moral character. But obviously, from the very first moments we meet Shepherd Book, there's a caveat that there is something deep, dark, and disturbing about him.
Well, and I think it's good to hit those other characters, especially because, like, as I was going through those first two episodes, I was saying I didn't see a ton of character development out of some of those central characters. The ones that I connected most with and thought were the most interesting were some of the lesser characters like Haley, but especially Shepherd was automatically a compelling character that you wanted to know more about.
Yes.
And was clearly going to be one of the most interesting characters in this entire series.
Yes, and I hate to break it to you, but you're not going to get your questions answered.
No, I think we would have.
Well, I mean, I didn't read the comic. They may have spelled out his entire origin in the comic, but it doesn't come out in the show. It doesn't come out in the movie. You have to have somewhere to take your audience, obviously.
Yeah, true.
But it's interesting to me that Wash is always the voice of reason. Wash is always the one who suggests the less violent possible outcomes be the better ones.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with Shepherd Book, Shepherd Book gets an introduction. We see him actually in a couple scenes before he meets Kaylee, and Kaylee has that whole discussion with him about you don't care, you're looking at the ships, you don't care where they're going, which tells a lot about him. You know, I would think look at the Mormons. They all go on their mission and they all have to go somewhere. Shepherd Book doesn't care where he's going. He just it's for him, like he said, for him it's about the journey.
Well, Shepherd Book, he spells it out quite clearly in the episode when Kaylee asks him if he's a missionary. He goes, "I guess."
Exactly. But contrast that with Simon's introduction, of which there is none of. He's just there.
That's not
when
true.
When Mal, Zoe, no. and Jane get back from Badger, there is no introduction of Simon. I mean, Jane's
there
got
is.
That great
there,
line. I mean, there's a bunch of things for Jane in there with a, you know, nothing, it's, carried it's, by nothing, divided by nothing, but there's no introduction of Simon.
It's visible. It's not acting. It's not. If you think about it, the choice of red sunglasses is not a mistake.
No, but I wanted something else, because all of a sudden here's this guy in red sunglasses who has this crate. We don't know what it is, and he's clearly basically looks like a spoiled rich kid asshole.
Look, obviously,
which is maybe what Joss was going for, but I wanted something else.
Okay, that's fine. But obviously the from when Kaylee boards the ship until Kaylee gets shot, we're looking at the weakest part of the episode. Can we all agree on that? We've got some really bad scenes in there. We have a 45-second long scene where Kaylee takes out a strawberry, looks at the strawberry, smells the strawberry, bites the strawberry.
I thought that was actually interesting.
I did too.
Because, you know, you have the mysterious box, and it was something that she was obviously intrigued by. You see the box a couple of times, and you get a perspective on this world from somebody who's just trying to start watching the show and understand it, that something as simple as a strawberry is something that can be especially valued in whatever this world is. I mean, they also have the dinner scene where they talk about spices and so on, and it's clear that food is something that's just difficult to come by, and you're not going to get
Mal spells it out for you.
Which comes in later with the whole patience thing. They're bringing them food.
Yes, I know, but Mal also spells out living on a spaceship in a single line, and it's true. It's true in Firefly. It's true on our own International Space Station. He says that you're welcome to have any food you want. It's pretty normal fare, protein and all the colors of the rainbow.
Yeah. True.
I mean, it's not like we're providing good food for people in space, because it just doesn't work.
No. I think this isn't Star Trek.
No. This is very much not Star Trek, obviously.
I think it's important to hit the contrast between the first two episodes, which we haven't hit yet, but on that first episode, I thought, talking about Shepherd, I thought one of the most important scenes was the one where he ends up basically in tears talking about whether he's on the right ship.
Yeah. And it's Inara who actually tells him he is.
Yeah.
I think that's neat, because they've set up, you've got the whore and the priest, and they end up having a really interesting moment, which is, again, brilliant Joss Whedon writing.
Yes. And she's not really a whore.
No, she's not, but she is.
Yes.
Well, it's just kind of going,
it's just that
I'm doing the hand
maybe
movement.
It's something.
He's waiting in his mind.
I thought that, you know, my understanding of the difference between a whore and a prostitute is whether or not you get paid. So maybe she doesn't meet that definition, but...
She gets paid, but there's a guild.
I'm sure she has to give guild dues. And
yes,
guild. There is a companion guild,
which we see in the train job.
Some things about that later.
Okay.
If I ever
DM a Dungeons & Dragons game ever again, I am going to make sure that there is a whores guild.
There should be a whores guild. Whores guilds are awesome.
That's my new favorite idea ever.
Well, also in the train job, Bill. There is a scene where Inara is combing Kaylee's hair.
In the beginning.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And in that scene, Kaylee asks if she's ever had to service a really disgusting client. And her response is, a companion chooses her own clients, thankfully.
Right.
Obviously, this is a little different than whoring.
Sure, and I guess that plays into the high class point that apparently supply and demand being what it is, she has that ability.
Yeah, yes, true. And obviously she, Inara is a bit of a balancing character between Jane, Mal, and Zoe, and that Jane, Mal, and Zoe could not be more Americanized characters if they tried. Now, by no means am I going to call Inara a Chinese character, but she's more of an Oriental courtesan than a whore.
Okay.
That's all right,
I'll give you that.
Yeah, it's a little bit balanced.
It's very true. It's very true.
Yeah, she's also the only one on the show who went to Juilliard.
Monica
Baccarin. Marina Baccarin.
Marina Baccarin. Sorry, Marina. So we've introduced our characters.
Yes.
And now we've put them in this world where they have essentially stolen from a ship that's drifting. They've stolen some food. The Alliance shows up in their city ship.
Well,
they've got to offload it, and they go to Badger.
They do. They go to Badger. And I think we have to go back just for a second to look at just how screwed up this world is. It's salvage off of a ship the Alliance can't be troubled with.
Well, the ship's dead.
It's
space junk at this
point. But you understand, it's they're basically denying someone the right to salvage that stuff for the sake of doing it.
How so?
Because they're not going to come and salvage it.
No, they're just going to let it float there.
Yeah,
they object to somebody else salvaging.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it really shows you the level of control we're talking about for the government. If that's how seriously they're going to take a problem like this, that like, sorry, no, you can't take that stuff. That's illegal.
But not enough. They don't object enough to actually pursue or follow up on it.
No, that's not true. They send out a wave on the Cortex, and you have to remember there. With the exception of the fact, this going back to lines that bother us from last week on Musings, Bill. In Joss Whedon land, I certainly hope a click is a lot farther away than a kilometer. Because when they activate the crybaby, the little communications guy goes, it's 13 clicks ahead. Really, 13 kilometers ahead, and you can't make it back to that ship. That better be a much larger unit of space than a kilometer. Yeah.
I don't know if they're working off of European standard metrics.
Well, probably not, no.
No.
I doubt the metric system survived into space since the Europeans didn't.
No, they didn't. It's the U.S. and China.
Yes.
I don't know if you picked that
Yards,
up.
Yards, baby.
It's the U.S. and China.
I definitely notice a variety of Asian characters and background scenes and so on.
Yes, my favorite is the good dogs cart.
Yeah, where they seem to be cooking.
Yeah.
The dogs?
Yes, good dogs.
Yes, good dogs. Yes.
Good dogs. Well, it's an unsavory world. There's a lot of indications that the whole world, even on a place like Persephone, which isn't a core world, but is pretty well developed.
You know, obviously it had giant skyscrapers and so on. It looks like a sort of like a capital world.
Well, yeah. Well, later on when you go to a core world, you'll see kind of the same cityscape, but everything's clean. It's like poor people aren't allowed to exist on the core world.
Exactly. So Badger comes back.
Badger does come back.
Fine was a badass. I'm assuming he comes back. I assume he was a one-off.
Badger actually comes back in the same episode that Niska comes back later. The Russian guy who
was
torturing. Yes, yeah, it's the same episode, I think. Yes,
no,
it is.
No, it's Shindig. Badger is in Shindig.
Oh, that's right. They can't go get Mal because of Badger, and that's when River goes all Cockney.
Yes, that's when she steals his accent on the fly.
Yes, she goes all Cockney.
Yeah.
So,
That guy's also very brilliant. I don't think either one of you ever watched Battlestar Galactica. But he became very, very important in the last two seasons of Battlestar Galactica. He's kind of like a lawyer-type character. He's a really brilliant actor.
Do you want to hit the element of the fact that apparently Episode 2 became the pilot, at least? That's what you're telling
me? Well, Episode 2 became the first air episode.
The first air episode.
And obviously...
go ahead.
Well, when you I don't know about what your first impressions were, Bill, but... Obviously, one of the notes that Fox had for him was that they felt that Mal wasn't likable enough.
He's not likable. That's his
and
character.
And that's the point.
And that's why you like him. People don't like
I didn't say that Fox was smart.
Fox, of course, is never smart. But what I noticed having just watched those first two is I can't even imagine the train robbery being the first episode because it doesn't bother to establish anybody. They're already on the ship with no character introduction. They do a little 5-minute narration intro to try to give you some background on it, but they do no introduction of how these people got here. Without those, that first episode, I don't even know how you watch it from there.
Well, and that was part of the problem, but knowing what I know about Serenity, having watched Serenity, and feel free to jump in, I feel that watching The Train Job after watching Serenity and kind of doing what we're doing here, I've noticed there is a little bit of introduction. It's just a lot less and much quicker. And we see a lot, we see the characters in one line, who they are, the end, and we move on to the action, which maybe doesn't make the overall story better, but for the first aired episode, I see what he was doing.
Yeah. Well, you can't blame him for the first episode.
Joss?
Yeah.
No, I blame Fox.
Obviously, Fox had the notes Fox had. He took them all. And there's a, I don't know if really this is intentional, but there's a rather large fuck you to Fox in The Train Job. And that's the fact that the MacGuffin is completely missing from that episode,
which
I didn't notice until we sat down to watch these. Mal's huh.
Mal's what?
What?
Mal always has a huh. Every episode.
Huh.
Huh.
That's true. I caught one of those. Where was it?
It was in Serenity. It's when he kicks over the container of River's container. He looks in. He goes, huh.
That's right.
That became MacGuffin. It was in every episode. Something happened. Mal had his huh. Except The Train Job.
On a practical point, though, I noticed that the Serenity episode is over an hour and 20 minutes long, and then the subsequent ones are more like 43 minutes to fit into television.
Yes.
Was the plan, if they were going to run that first one, to just make it longer?
It didn't fit into a
single episode.
I think Joss's intent was to do a two-hour episode. Fox could have said, go and edit this, and we wouldn't have needed 55 seconds of Kaylee eating a strawberry.
The break is where... That's the break.
Yeah.
When he opens the crate and River's there, that's the break of the two episodes.
It's a commercial break, which I didn't see because I watched it on Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah. No, so obviously they wanted a much brighter, happier Mal in the episode. They also obviously wanted more action and less humor because...
The Train Job is funnier.
It's funnier.
It's funnier.
But it's not Joss Whedon-style humor.
It's important to see that Mal is kind of an asshole on top of things. You see the way that he fucks with Simon by telling him that Kaylee is dead.
Yeah.
And so on. You have to see that he's sort of an imperfect character just to appreciate him. Because if he's going to be the Indiana Jones character, as you're saying, that's a flawed character. You have to see that to
obviously, they're all flawed characters.
I don't know if I, having seen two episodes, I don't know if I saw flaws in a lot of people. It's focused on Mal, and they make a good point of trying to show his flaws.
I'm actually going to break this up real quick. My wife has just sat in on this. Real quick, one sentence before you run in the house. What your first impression of Serenity, the first episode? I made you watch it, and you fell in love with it. What was your first really impression of the show?
I was under wisdom tooth pain medication, so I was really high, and I don't think I had a first impression. Which one was the first episode? Because you made me watch them in order, right?
Yeah, that was the one where we introduce all the characters and Kaylee gets shot.
The one where Summer Glau is naked.
Summer Glau's naked.
I'm a girl. I don't remember when Summer Glau was naked. If I want to see a naked girl, I can look in the mirror.
All right, so she was high, so she doesn't remember it. Lame.
No. I'll remember. That's where they have the doctors, right?
No, that's the second. That's the Train Job.
I remember Simon pretty much in every shot.
Apparently she likes
the one where Simon. He wears the red sunglasses.
I put it this way. During my wisdom tooth debacle, I watched the entire season plus the movie just to get to the Simon Kaylee kiss.
Which happened in the last scene of the movie.
Completely worth it. Could have been longer, but worth it.
We spend a lot of time just looking at the characters who we don't know from anything else and trying to figure out who they look or sound like, because the Simon character strikes me as having a very Jason Bateman vibe of sorts.
I also heart Jason Bateman.
And Jane sort of looks like Ben Affleck, but reminds me mainly of like Bill Paxton from Weird Science.
He's like an unwashed Affleck.
Yeah, I'll
it's
take
like if
that.
Affleck lost his job and gave up showering, he would be Jane.
He would be Jane. I really wanted to get your impression on it because you came in and sat in, and I thought you will. I made
you
watch
what?
Firefly.
Here's what I will tell you: it is a very good show, and it's a good bridge show because not being predisposed to geekery, I had my doubts, but I did enjoy it, and I watched it pretty much nonstop.
Well, there you go.
But apparently not enough of you did.
Which means the pilot did its job, which is really the point of this podcast, is that did the pilot do its job, and I guess it did.
And I don't ever remember it being on TV, so there you go. I don't remember... I remember previews for the movie. I don't remember any previews for the television show. I watched it.
And what I wonder is now, obviously, Fox has this thing going on where they've brought back things like Family Guy and so on when there was mass fan demand, and there obviously is a huge fan demand because they flooded Comic-Con to see the panel on it 10 years after the fact, but apparently never had enough demand to actually get any movement on the show. How did that happen?
Because Fox kind of killed it. I mean,
when Fox sold it to Universal, there was a 5-year
ban on making
a television show.
Yeah, which they could do now, but it's too late now.
The movie... unfortunately hit in a time period where Hollywood was just not in general doing very well.
And now everyone would wonder why Castle's in space.
It's true. It's very true. Yeah. It's very true. But
they could make another movie. They're not going to, though.
They could. I don't necessarily know if they will. You know, going back to the train job, you know, we were talking about humor in that episode, and we talked earlier about Zoe not really having any character development. I think she shines in the train job. I really do. I mean, they put her as kind of a foil to Mal. They put her as really the second in command, as someone who kind of calls him out on his bullshit, which makes the relationship between Wash, Zoe, and Mal interesting, which, again, comes to fruition later.
Yeah, but they also set that up in Serenity.
They did. They did.
They spend some time dealing with the fact that Wash feels like he's in a marriage with Zoe and Mal. And not just Zoe.
Yeah, and that there's the whole second Niska episode, War Stories. I think it's War Stories.
It's War Stories.
Where you know they literally address that, and that is a huge driving thrust of that episode.
Yes.
I assume at some point the Reavers are going to become a major development.
Yes, yes. We haven't talked about Reavers. We got to talk about the Reavers.
Talked about the Reavers.
Because Reavers really aren't necessary to the.
I'm endlessly fascinated by the Reavers, having not seen them, and I assume that it's going to become a major thing, but that adds an entirely new fascinating element to what's going on in these, in whichever episode they were.
The next episode, Bushwhacked, we'll get into the Reavers a little bit.
Throughout the series, the Reavers are the unknown creepy crawly that's waiting just beyond the pool of
They seem as like the White Walkers in Game of Thrones, a sort of mysterious thing that I haven't seen yet, but I'm sure is fucking terrifying, and I want to know more.
But bloodier. Yes.
Oh, and they explained it very... Zoe explained it very well in that first episode, you know, and when she says, they will rape us to death... cut off our
eat
our flesh, and then sew our skins into their clothing, and if we're very lucky, they'll do it in that order, and all of a sudden, everybody wants to know who the hell these Reavers are.
Yeah, and apparently they run a ship that is missing some sort of very important component.
Yes, the core containment.
Which I don't know what that means, but damn, it sounds interesting.
Why do I remember this? Was it the medication again?
Maybe it was the medication.
Quite possibly.
The upshot here is, you can watch the show high, but don't watch it on... whatever they give you for your wisdom teeth, because you remember nothing.
It was some.
She remembers Simon.
I remember
she
Simon.
She remembers Simon. What else you got? I know you made some notes. What else you got? Because we've kind of talked about the introduction of the characters. We've kind of talked a little bit about how the train job sort of reintroduces the characters.
Well, yeah, and I do. I don't know about you, but I found there's a kind of an interesting Star Trek themed joke in the train job, and that's
a look.
Funny Star Trek joke. Do tell.
Well. And not funny that way. Funny, like, we always deal in Star Trek with the fact that apparently it's not that big a deal if the captain and the first officer always leave the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Firefly universe, apparently when the captain and the first officer leave the ship, bad things happen.
Jane gets to be in charge.
Jane gets to be in charge.
And you have to drug him to fix things.
Yes. Which is just a brilliant moment for Simon.
Which it really is a brilliant moment for Simon, because
what isn't a brilliant moment for Simon?
In the first episode, Simon's
kind of...
For those
of us who don't want to sleep with the man, some of them.
He is gay, I think. Sean Mayer, I think, is gay.
Is he in something else I would know?
To be fair... Yeah,
Much Ado About Nothing.
So
he
no.
He's good in that, too.
No, he will
oh,
be
no,
good
he
in
be
that.
Good
he will be good in
the previews. Did we see
yeah,
previews?
We saw some clips.
It's okay, I can see it in my head. But to be fair, I did marry Dan because he was close enough to gay... but still liking of the vagina.
Oh, thank
she,
you for that.
I think she just called you a big woman.
I think she did. Yeah. It's my man card. The train job.
So cutting that out.
Obviously, the train job is not overall as strong an episode as
Star. It's not. It's not. The dude who played the sheriff, I thought,
Greg Henry, he was very good in that episode. Guy.
I really thought that the entirety of Mal and Zoe and the crew not looking too closely at what they're stealing and then finding out it's medicine and deciding not to steal it, I thought was a very pivotal moment for, as we say, you know, the family building. But you're right. I think you were right. It doesn't work as a first aired episode.
No, I have no. No. I would have no idea why Simon and
River are on that ship.
Why are they on that? Why is anybody on that ship? And who the hell are these people? You have zero backstory on that episode. I can't even fathom that they would try to sell that as the first episode, because anybody who tried to watch that first would be endlessly confused.
Yeah. Well, you also have to remember we're talking about a place, a network that felt they could show you an episode, then show you 2 weeks of baseball. Then show you another episode and show you a week of baseball.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, it came out right during the postseason that year.
And that's
it was on
right.
Friday nights at
yes,
8, so
that's
it kept
right.
getting co-opted for baseball.
Yes, so not only did they air them out of order, they put baseball, postseason baseball, in between showing the episodes. No wonder they didn't get...
And a lot of people... I remember my first experience with Firefly was I missed the first episode. I missed Train Job. So I turned on Bushwhacked. And... it starts with a little weird girl going ghosts, and I'm just kind of like, what the fuck is
going on here?
So, obviously, I didn't continue watching it.
Did not watch it when it aired. I was actually dating this girl who hated everything that had anything to do with geekiness, and I literally fought for, like, Comic-Con every year.
This is why it's canceled, people.
Basically, the entire time, all of her and her friends did was make fun of me, and so I ended up catching Firefly later. Much later, and...
Well, I think most people caught it on DVD.
See, that's the problem. We were all late to the party.
See, that's the thing. Even the people who want to make podcasts about the show didn't actually watch it.
No, it's not surprising that it got canceled.
I'm going to throw this out. Something we talked about earlier before we started the podcast is you were going to blow my mind with something about the train job.
It was Serenity. It was with the cut from the statement of the show to the space toilet, and it just went right over your head.
It did. It didn't blow my mind. Although it's
so classic Joss Whedon.
It is very classic Joss Whedon. The one thing that he didn't do in this show was he didn't kill a major character in the first episode. Joss Whedon definitely has a tendency to make you love a character and then kill them very quickly, and he didn't do that here, and I like that he didn't do that here because it gave us time. We were introduced to these people in Serenity or the train job, and then all of a sudden we start to care about these characters. Now I don't know what was going to happen in season 2, 3 or beyond, however
they all end up dead.
The simple fact that he didn't go into this wanting to kill a character. In Angel, he went into that knowing Doyle was going to die at some point. Doyle ended up dying 6 episodes in, but he knew that going in. He didn't do that here.
When else has he done that? Who'd he kill in Dollhouse?
In Buffy, he killed one of Xander and Willow's friends in the first episode.
Yeah, but that's not a loved character. That's a peripheral person.
But we knew who he was, and the original object was he was going to put that person in the credits and then kill them. He did it in Angel. He put Doyle in the credits and then killed them. In Dollhouse, I'm sure I can think of it if I
have
enough time.
Well, obviously, Reed Diamond goes to the
Reed Diamond, yeah. He's definitely in the credits. And all of a sudden, in episode 12, episode 10, he's gone.
Yeah, but 6 episodes, 10 episodes, that's a pretty decent life when you're battling demons and people with sharp sticks.
Or
nefarious corporations.
How much of Dollhouse have you seen?
All.
Well, obviously, the point of Dollhouse is not to kill anyone. He took his most beloved character in the show and turned them into the villain, and the villain of the show. Yeah. So, kind of the same theme, though. He seems to want to take those characters from you.
He likes to fuck with your emotions.
Yes.
All right. What else you got?
I, you know, we're at the hour mark.
We got some time. We got a few more minutes.
Billy looks kind of bored.
No, we've got time that I'm certain is going to be edited out.
Yes.
That's true.
That is true.
Like all the new stuff.
To be honest, I don't have a heck of a lot more. Is this something you'd like to discuss?
Well, I don't necessarily know.
I can sit here and gush if you'd like.
Because really, that's what we do.
I think the music is absolutely brilliant. In fact, I even wrote down Greg Edmondson's name.
The music so for everyone, Firefly?
Yes, would know that Greg Edmondson was the man who did it.
I will...
The underscoring music, not the theme music.
Okay, not the theme song. The theme song's questionable.
Okay, so she's with me. The theme song is terrible.
It's awful.
It's really bad.
Yeah, no, I can't do it.
And when I saw that Joss was actually the writer of it, I felt really bad for him.
The theme song is one of those songs that when you're driving through Oklahoma in the 80s and you could only get country music made by people who lived in trailers, that would be the song they sang.
Airing to people who lived in trailers.
I'll take the little guitar riffs in between scenes and so on as fitting in, but yeah, no, that theme song's got to go.
All right, I'm going to throw this out there then, because this is a question that I thought. Does Serenity work as a pilot? And I think that's the crux of the show.
If you edit it,
okay, edit it
the
how?
Movie?
No, I mean, not the first
take
episode.
The strawberries, you got to cut more.
No, like the first. Okay, well,
okay.
I think,
how would you edit it to make it work as a pilot? Because I think it does work as a pilot, only because I've seen the rest of the episodes.
Well, no, obviously,
this is a question for you.
Introductory episode, it does a very good job because it introduces at least half of the characters in the show well. And the other characters, we find out which of the commedia dell'arte, stereotypical kind of roles they're going to be playing on this show.
What about the world?
Where's the Harlequin?
Where's the Harlequin?
Commedia dell'arte.
I didn't say that it was commedia dell'arte.
Ah, touche.
I honestly, and I brought this up before, I honestly would have skipped the entire battle scene at the beginning. I know you think it's important, but I think it would have... If they had just started off introducing the characters and at some point had fit in flashbacks that sort of made the viewer feel clever by seeing what happened and having a contrast with something they had seen a few minutes earlier and filled in that backstory as they went along, I think it would have fit just fine.
Okay. All right, Des, what do you... I mean, besides editing, like, what would you have edited out? So we know that it works
for
Bill.
I think the entire Simon Red Herring storyline... is kind
yeah,
of
okay.
unnecessary.
Yes, it really. Yes, yes, yes.
All we need, all we really need, is a brief. Someone tried to send a wave out on the Cortex. We don't need like 15 minutes setting up that Simon is the red herring.
So you didn't need Mal punching him out, only to discover that it was
no. That
because I thought
that's
some
that
character development on Mal.
That scene's fine, but there's the images of Simon with the red glasses on. There's the scene in the galley where Simon's like, some of my things are in the cargo bay, where he's kind of playing menacing. You know, that all leads you to the conclusion that when the wave goes out, that Simon's the one who sent it. They're not really necessary.
And they skip through that pretty quickly.
And to be honest, I don't have a problem with the Kaylee strawberry scene. What I have a problem with is the fact that it's 55 seconds long. I don't have a problem with the Reaver scene, the first one. Except for the fact that it's 5.5 minutes long and it's mostly a ship coming really slowly at another ship.
Oh, I rewatched that today. That drag. I didn't realize how much that scene drags.
And also, I think it's a little... The whole Reaver thing, I like the fact that they introduced the Reavers in the first episode, but it seems really preposterously stupid to me. And that's because I need the characters to be least as smart as us. Dan, we're on a spaceship.
All right, we're on a spaceship.
Evil cannibal people are coming to eat us.
I would run away.
How do we fix this?
I would run away.
Let's say we can't. They're going to board us. How do we fix this?
Jane's got a lot of guns.
Fuck you. I'm going to depressurize my ship.
Ah, you're a smart man. Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
And instead, you've got Inara with the, I'm going to poison myself with my little magic courtesan needle.
They are conveying the level of fear because you as the viewer don't have that level of fear yet.
No, I'm not
them.
Saying they didn't have a point in doing it. I'm saying that there's at least a half hour of material you can cut out of that episode. Of various little bits and pieces. There's also, as much as I love the humor before the ambush, which is one of my favorite lines in television. Does everyone remember this scene? Jane comes running up. He talks about how he's buried the stuff.
Yes.
He goes, Captain, can you hear me?
I'm
standing right here.
Because I'm standing
right here. You're coming in loud and clear, Captain. That's because I'm
standing
right here.
Yes.
But it's not really necessary.
No, but it adds an element of funny, and on a show like this,
they also have like
need to have an element of funny.
They also have like 75 to 90 seconds of Mal looking out over the valley.
True.
Where he's going to give us a description of how they're going to be ambushed. We don't need to see him putting it together in his head.
There's a lot of talking, not showing on that.
Exactly. And
scene.
And I think what that is the fact that I'm not entirely positive on this, Dan, but this could possibly be the first pilot Joss filmed or directed.
I'm not actually sure. I think it might be. I'm not sure.
I don't think he did Buffy one.
Like filmed? Like directed?
Like directed. I don't think he directed the
I don't know.
Because you have to remember that Joss never recovered for the longest time from the Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie.
True.
Which he directed, and people just went, this guy's got some interesting ideas, man, but don't let him direct.
Well, interestingly enough, now Joss Whedon is the go-to guy in Hollywood because of the Avengers,
yes.
Which I find to be very interesting how he went from Buffy to the Avengers.
Also, if you just think about the fact that if you look at modern movies are really bad, right? We can all agree on this. Like, yes. A lot of them are not very good.
Most of them.
There's a reason
for
this.
Next week's Amusings of a Geek that I want to talk about.
Yeah, there's a reason for that, and that's the fact that almost any product at this point, you can make your money back on in international sales of DVDs and the film reels. So because of it, if you look at Joss Whedon, even though none of the show, well, Buffy survived, but every other show he's ever done didn't get a normal ending episode because they were canceled, then he still made a lot of money for a lot of people because they've sold a lot of DVDs of those shows.
I just want to throw something out there. Just in case anybody else is listening to this and you're hearing the jingle jangles, we're recording this outside and my dog has decided to go on a tear. Love my dog.
Yes.
I don't know if she'd be a Firefly fan.
Of course she does. She loves red bandanas. She wants one right now.
It's very true. Okay, so I think overall you've got an editing issue. Bill thinks that we should have had flashbacks, which... There is an episode, which is my favorite episode of the series, called Out of Gas, that uses flashbacks very well, which when you see it, the flashback thing works incredibly, I think.
Yes.
I'm not a giant flashback fan, but if it's used well...
And in that episode, it's used well.
Then so be it.
I think Will's expressing that he doesn't feel the first scene of the episode fits with the rest of the episode.
No.
I don't like it
as an introduction to the show.
Personally, I think... I like it as a pilot, but because I've seen the rest of the Firefly universe on film that we have.
Well, I think that what happened is exactly this is how the pilot system worked well. In the fact that it's an episode that introduced characters and a world that producers want to make this show, but didn't completely sell them, which led to the train job. Now, the train job, I think a lot of the problems in the train job are probably notes from the producers or possibly Joss's perception of what the producers wanted, but all in all, I think it makes you want to watch the show.
You mean the train job?
No, I mean the first episode.
It does.
My biggest problem with the train job is I don't think the train job by itself makes you want to necessarily come back. I think Will's right. No character in it really gets introduced well enough that you want to go on the journey with these people. You might tune back in because there's some wit in there. There's some snappy, you know, remarks, but I don't think you really care if they get caught.
But upshot being, having seen those first two episodes, I will almost certainly watch the rest.
And I think that's really it, because as we, and correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, I think we're kind of getting to the end. As we continue pilots, I think that's really the goal, is because I'm sure we're all going to watch shows that maybe we haven't seen everything on. I know I had mentioned at one point I'd like to do Mad Men, and I know both of you haven't really watched Mad Men, and I've seen all of it. So it'd be interesting to see what your impression of that particular episode is, and would you watch the rest of it? You're willing to watch the rest of Firefly. Well, Des, you and I have seen Firefly, so we've already gone through it, so it clearly worked for us.
Yeah.
So I think this is a one in the win column.
Yeah, definitely. All definitely. Right. I would have approved it. But then again, I wouldn't have canceled it. But my criteria for what makes a show successful is a little different than a Hollywood studio.
It's important to get out of the way so they could show the 80s show.
Yes, because that was on at the same time. That 80s show, yes.
Yeah, yeah. You gotta add all those brilliant Fox programs that we've seen through the years. They were really important to get on the air.
Yeah.
Well, Fox,
I could do a whole Fox show.
Fox has a real problem with sci-fi. In fact, Firefly had it slightly easier than some shows. My favorite are Freaky Lynx and Harsh Realm, both of which Fox canceled about an hour before the East Coast premiere of the pilot episode.
That's terrible.
What's the point at that point? Put the damn thing on and see what kind of ratings you get.
That's terrible. All right, so I guess that's kind of our...
That's our discussion of not of Firefly, of the first couple episodes.
What are we doing next?
Next week, I think we're going to...
Next pilots.
Next pilots, whenever that may be. We're going to come back and we're going to do Rob Livingston's brilliant 2009 offering, Defying Gravity.
All right.
Which is one of my favorite shows, and is a good contrast to the one we did tonight, which is less about dialogue than it is about what the camera's doing.
And I'm going to watch it for that because I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
So I will watch it.
I think, and I think the both of you will like it.
I will watch
homework.
But we got 2 weeks.
We also had a request from Will at some point, I believe, that we do Breaking Bad. Is that right, Will?
That is very true.
All right. So then we've got Mad Men. We've got Breaking Bad. We'll have a few others. We're obviously big Joss Whedon's fans, so we'll probably hit Dollhouse at some point.
I think that would be a lot.
And specifically the two separate pilots.
Yes. Yes, and I have those.
Which are very similar, but also very different.
Very, very different.
And if anyone out there has any other suggestions, it might be interesting to have one of these podcasts where none of us have seen it before we...
Oh, yeah, tweet
before
us.
Before we do it. Give us some ideas. You can like us on Facebook. I'm sure we'll have a Twitter account probably tomorrow when I get around to making one.
Yeah, right now you can tweet us at MOAG blog, which right now will work for pilots, but I'm hoping that we're going to have a Twitter account. Also, this feed will not be on its own feed, not like right now we've got musingsofageek.com. This show will currently reside on musingsofageek.com until later, maybe when we have our own pilots feed. One thing that I do want to throw out there to everybody is we do have the PayPal account out there. We're listener supported, so if you like what you hear, throw us a couple bucks.
And if you're one of the few people who listen to this whole podcast and hasn't seen Firefly, you should go buy it on Amazon. It's cheap on Blu-ray, it's cheap on DVD, and they have it in direct stream view. And if you want to be a friend of the show, go to the website, musingsofageek.com. We have an Amazon banner. Click on Amazon through that, and they'll give us a few of the shekels you spend on their product.
Exactly. Buy Firefly, support the show. And so I'm going to let you close this out.
Well, that's about it. That was Pilots. We hope you had fun, and we'll go back to our normal level of nerdery and geekiness next week for Musings of Geek Episode 3. Why don't we give a little tease, Dan? What's it going to be?
Well, besides throwing out there that we may have the opportunity to talk about Mark Hamill's motorcycle accident,
I've decided we're just going to talk about that in every podcast.
I do want to maybe touch on, again, remakes, because I don't think we're quite done with that topic yet.
No. And I've got some brilliant stuff with you.
Oh, yeah.
Of the world's best remake. There's your teaser right there. The world's
best
remake.
And it depends on what happens this week in Geekland. I learned this week that Warner Brothers is thinking of maybe rebooting Batman in 2016. And I think I'd like to talk about kind of where I think Warner Brothers is going with the whole Justice League thing, not to mention...
They're probably going to have to, what with the fact that they're not going to have Superman anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a theory, and I'd like to kind of expound on that. And we're going to have the board up, and we're going to throw some darts to the board and see what sticks.
We're also going to have some themed episodes coming up, right, Dan?
I'd like to do a Rocky Horror episode.
And I believe you and I don't know if Will wants to sit in on this one, are going to spend an hour or two arguing about
Marvel.
DC Marvel.
Yeah, so we've got the two shows. This was Pilots. I hope you really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Listen to Musings of a Geek. And like I said, I'm going to let you close this one out. And thanks for hosting the first show, Dez.
Indeed.
I think it was really good.
And so go forth and multiply and watch television, because television is perhaps the most important media in our society, except when you're listening to the radio, because then you're listening to us.
This has been a production of the Musings of a Geek podcast network.